a Motorsport Podcast Network production. Hey everyone, welcome along. This is our race control episode of the V8 Sleuth podcast, where we take a look at the weekend supercars racing and we break it on down with the man who knows about it all. He's the driving standards advisor for the Repco Supercars Championship. Craig Baird is with me again. Bairdo, we have got a little bit to chat about from the weekend, my friend. It looks like the boys were keen to get among it. Short races, soft tyres, and I reckon the racing was pretty hot. Did it keep you busy in race control, all things considered?
Yeah, it did. In some ways it did, but the racing, the product that they put on was so good. And this may sound a little bit stupid, but I didn't really get time to watch the actual races play out, because obviously if someone puts an inquiry in about someone jumping a start or not being in their box, I'm already starting to look at that. So yeah, they were really busy and I didn't really get a chance until today to go through and replay all the races and actually see how good a game they put on. The ref was busy, but I didn't have to blow the whistle that much.
There's a little bit to cover off, but before we get into some of the specific incidents on track, a further comment on that. So we all went into the weekend and a lot was made of the paddock situation, of not having pit stop races, but I must admit I hadn't really stopped to ponder the next part of the no use of the pit lane for the races, i.e. compulsory pit stops. With no pit stops, the only place you could strategically pass someone was on the track. No undercut, no overcut. It really promoted a better form of racing overall, and was probably something that we hadn't all really collectively stopped and looked at, whether it be media or people inside the category. The focus has been on other elements, but if we could get a weekend's racing like that every weekend, I think we'd take it.
Yeah, for sure. I think from a driver's perspective, and a few of the boys said to me, they've got to get on with the job on the track. They can't wait and, as you said, undercut or overcut someone. Got to get on with it, which they did. But I think it brings us back to a little bit of old school racing. It moved us back 20 years where it was just like an Australian touring car race where let's just go. It goes green and we push on as hard as we can until we see the checker. But, yeah, the racing product, it was just, I don't know, sometimes I feel like we go from round to round and it's a little bit of a cookie cutter. We just seem to do the same things and every team's got such strong engineering base behind them. They don't sneak out with a strategy play that's miles better than everyone else. It's kind of dictated to by the regulations. So, yeah, it was refreshing for me. It really was. It was one of those weekends. You mentioned it earlier. We were a bit worried about the no pit stops. We were a little bit worried about the compound. You walk around the compound and it just had a softer feel to it. It just felt like people were interacting. I know the fans couldn't get in there, but the teams themselves, you sort of see them standing around and having a bit of a chat, and there was a bit of time to do that. So I thought it was quite refreshing.
Yeah, it was definitely a big weekend on the track, and if we could just tweak that part up and get the fans a bit closer to the supercars, which they're accustomed to at the Grand Prix, that would be great. So hopefully that can be sorted for next year. So let's get into it, because over the course of 4 days, there were four races, one each day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, but probably of all of the on-track scenarios, the one that really caught everybody's eye and had the most attention was the Saturday race. Cam Waters, Matt Payne, a couple of Mustang drivers having a solid run. So let's just strip this down. Both cars end up in the fence at the final corner, which opened the door for Brock Feeney to go on by. But was this one of those ones where, all right, Cam was a bit guilty at turn 13, the left-hander with the bump on Matt, which got him to the position for then Matt's lack of, I guess, spatial awareness to play out at turn 14. So they kind of both contributed to the outcome through the two different corners. Therefore, it's kind of the penalty is they've got two cars that need to be repaired anyway.
Yeah, and that was the biggest basis of it, is me adding more salt to both of their wounds was of no benefit. As you said, Waters had a foul at 13, if I had to put myself in Payne's position, he was just a little bit clumsy. But when you ride on board with him, I think where Waters felt aggrieved more than anything was he thought that Payne was actually trying to shut him down. On the onboard, I looked at his eyes the whole time from the time he got hit to the time that the contact was at 14 or entry to 14. He never once even looked across that side. So he was clumsy and at that level, you probably should say he should have better spatial awareness. And I spoke about that with the teams and his team and they took that on board. But you got to remember, he's still really a first year apprentice. He's only just finished his first full season. He's got speed to burn, but it's all these little things that all the rookies that have come in for the first couple of years, they do some silly little things. It's the pressure of leading a race. And he had a mirror full of Brock Feeney having a look down the inside. So he was trying to cover that off. He really needed to think, well, I got a bump and a run from Cam. Where's he gone? He's somewhere in there. He didn't just evaporate. So, yeah, my take or my sort of discussion with the stewards during the race was they've both got a little bit of blood on their hands. They're both DNF'd. I spoke to both drivers, and I spoke to Stephen Grove about it, and we move on. The sad part is, well, it's not the sad part, but if I'm Brock Feeney and Will Brown, how many gifts am I going to keep getting from Ford drivers? Mm. We've been on and on about parity and this and that, and that was a weekend that Ford, I wouldn't say could have dominated, but they should have won some races. That's the real key.
Yeah, and the P word did not get a run in terms of anyone I spoke to on the weekend, because there were Fords in the mix. They just found ways of not quite getting it sorted. One of the big things I wanted to ask you about in this particular scenario, if the turn 14 collision with both cars in the wall doesn't happen, is it 5 seconds for Cam for the rattle on Matt Payne, or had he not lost positions, it was just on the edge? What would have been the story there?
No, so at that stage, he hadn't lost the position, so I would let them play on. And Cam's smart enough that he knew he rattled him, so he probably wasn't even going to march on with the move, because we have this word redress. It's not a rule. Let's make that very clear. But if they play on with no position change, let's keep the game of rugby flowing.
And I guess he didn't whack him off the road and cars instantly went past. It was still playing out once they picked themselves up for the next corner. It's just that it all sort of turned to custard from there on.
Correct. So he went into the corner leading. He came out of the corner leading. It just went downhill very rapidly from there.
I think, too, that the thing that really caught people's ear, because it doesn't happen in front of, you know, there's incidents on racetracks. They don't generally happen in front of a big grandstand of people where that it's like a big amphitheater coming onto the pit straight. So when Cam opened the door to give him a mouthful and then slammed it, the reaction from the crowd was a massive roar. And I reckon that's something that we need to, I mean, these guys are not robots. They've got, they're professional athletes at the top tier of the sport. I thought that was fantastic theatre, and we would want more of that.
So did I.
Yeah, yeah. And 20 years ago in race control, I mean, I vividly recall, and I don't have it with me right in front of me, Rick Kelly was fined $5,000, I remember that bit, for some comments he made at the Grand Prix, and I think it was actually at the same corner of all places. There was an incident between he and Russell Ingle, who was driving for Stone Brothers at the time. Rick said some comments in the aftermath on the Channel 10 coverage. Actually, I've just found it. I was just searching online, and I was doing a bit of padding to get to it. He was fined $5,000 for bringing the sport into disrepute over comments made during the telecast. And from my memory, the comments were totally nothing burger. So there was that period where we had, and you were driving at the time, they were really hot on fining and penalising for bringing the sport into disrepute. But I'd argue strongly that stuff like that doesn't bring the sport into disrepute. It actually connects people and gets them fired up and interested, because there's passionate, talented people who have had something go against them. Yeah, correct.
It's the emotion, exactly. And it's good to see that. And I agree with you. It's very different if someone's physically abused or you're swearing at someone and it's broadcast on live TV. Those things are bringing the sport into disrepute. But to show the passion, Cam had just got a new car. He's fast. He's capable of winning that race, and it just, in a split second, he's got a car that at the time he thought was going to not continue for the rest of the weekend. So this passion, this emotion, I agree. We've got to let this carry on a bit because we are competing with all sorts of sports and they've all got emotion. Things are all boiling up and happening. We can't sanitize the racing nor the personality. But there's a fine line. We can step over that line for sure.
Absolutely. And keeping it this side of the line is the go. But slamming a door and, you know, telling a bloke what you think about him because he's just fenced you is completely warranted and I'm all for it. So that's the Cam Waters, Matt Payne scenario from Saturday. Let's go to Sunday, closing stages. A few people have asked about this one, and I'm sure you've had and seen and read some stuff in the aftermath. So Ryan Wood, the young Kiwi from Walkinshaw Andretti United, 30 seconds for the hit that put Cameron Hill off into the gravel and out of the race after having what was a pretty good weekend up to that point. So this is an interesting one from an overall perspective that I think is important for our fans of the Supercars Championship to understand. Why is that 130 seconds? Is it because he finished off his race and he was a non-finisher without the ability to claw it back because the Grand Prix races are very short? Was it more on the actual what Ryan did in the car to make the contact, or is it a bit of both that means it's a 30-second race?
No, not at all. A penalty always has to have an effect. So on the last lap of the race, his move, which was obviously accidental, but it still happened, took Hill out of the race. He's a DNF. So 5 seconds, we have a penalty scale. We have a sliding small, medium, and large. We were always working over that weekend on the smaller side of the envelope because the races were so short. 5 seconds to a car could put them from fourth to last at some points of that race. So I discussed with the stewards, I said, I'd feel a lot more comfortable dealing with smaller penalties because it's a smaller race. There's not a lot of time to be able to work that off. But we always said, you DNF someone, it's still a large. Hill was eighth. I think on the rundown of that quarter, he might have lost one position. I think maybe ninth to a DNF. 5 seconds wouldn't have had the effect I needed that Hill had, and it wasn't his fault. So 30 seconds, you DNF a car, you get a large. It's as simple as that. And I did have to laugh because people were going on how harsh that was and everything else. And then I looked at Shane getting a 30-second penalty in NASCAR for track limits, which I was just trying to scratch my head and work out what track limit that was. Yeah. So if you want harsh, track limits 30 seconds it seems a lot harsher to me.
So I guess that in future, it's a good point to raise that you've got to take into account not just the actual on-the-track scenario and the contact and where a car ends up or what happens, but in the context of the broader event, race, day. I mean, we were dealing with very short time certain windows, which is just the fact of racing at a Formula One World Championship event. You can't get around that. That is what it is. But would we say if we looked ahead to Taupo for the next round where we've got a couple of 200K races, longer races, more window, more time, more opportunity. So if the same sort of scenario happened there, Cam Hill might have 150 kilometres of racing to get going again and, you know, close back up behind the safety car, stay on the lead lap. Is that sort of a way that fans should be trying to understand this one?
No, not really. Once you've benched a car and taken them out of that many positions, it's always a large. You turn a car, and most of the fives would have been 15s on the weekend. So I sort of wanted to work with fives and 15s. But look, we move on from here. We've got no more 14 lap races. Exactly. We go back to our same penalty table, and whether you talk to a team owner, a driver, they already know how that sliding scale works. There's only three, 5, 15, and basically a 30 or a drive-through penalty equal. Everyone knows that. We've played that for a long time now. It just happened that there was a lot of fives, which are big penalties in a 14 lap race. But I couldn't. If I'd given Wood a 5-second penalty then, he would have only dropped a few spots in the queue, and finished well ahead of the car he took off the track. Now, if he had gone down into turn six and touched the back of Hill, Hill ran a little bit wide, lost 3 or 4 spots, it would have been the same as everyone else. In that 5-second bracket, people said, "Oh, but you didn't give Forward enough." Well, when Forward put his penalty on at the end of the race, he was the dead last. He was last runner. So they had big effects. They seemed small, but they had big effects.
Yeah, it's a broader viewpoint than the specific. You know, it can get very easy to be tunnel visioned onto the actual incident rather than the sort of what it all means for the parties in the bigger picture. So,
correct.
Yeah. Yep. There were a range of those 5-second penalties over the weekend for sort of bumps that put cars wide and lost a few spots. We saw it with Chas Mostert on Sunday, with Matt Payne at the end of the sweeper over the other side of the lake. There was one on Nick Percat on Thursday, wasn't there, for the...
Well, the Chas one's actually the perfect example, because he made a mistake. He owned that mistake. They went off first and second, and they came back on fourth and sixth. He didn't wreck Matt Payne's day completely. Yeah, he took him out of the lead, and if you're the team owner, you're going to be absolutely pissed about it. But at the end of the day, he didn't completely destroy his day, so I didn't completely destroy his day. Let them play on and leave the guys in the fight.
Agreed. I wanted to cover off something with you too, because, of course, the Grand Prix is... what's the word I'm thinking of? It's compromised to a degree because of the windows of time. It's not a regular round of the championship in terms of the track time and all of the elements that we have at our other events. Were there any limitations on you in terms of what you had access to, of vision or things in race control that changed the game for you, or is it very much a case of it's the same as every other weekend?
No, I probably didn't have the tools exactly how I would have with telemetry and everything else for me in race control. And because of a lot of the broadcast rules around what you can have and who owns what, sometimes I could view something and to be fair, I was actually utilized Michael Massey a little bit to try and help me within that Formula One system to try and access the odd thing here and there. So I sort of, I wasn't just sitting down, with all my own tools. I was up and about and running across and getting other people to do things. And yeah, it was a little bit different. It's a little bit hectic, but that's what we've always had to work with there. But you know, we get through it. It's no different than the guys in there working, in the paddock. It's a compromise. It's a little bit harder, but, we get through it.
We do, and we get through it and go now to your homeland, off to New Zealand for our return to Kiwiland. Taupo is going to host its first Supercars Championship round. For our listeners, Berto, you've done a bit of racing there, well, a fair bit of racing there over the years. What's it like in terms of an Australian track that you can give a comparison to? Are you expecting the drivers, because there's a lot of them in their first time there, what's it going to shape out like? Are you expecting a busy weekend in race control, a quieter one because the races are longer? What's your thoughts?
No, it'll be a gunfight. These boys will be hard at it. It's not a big circuit, but we've operated categories like A1 GP, very fast, very big cars there. So don't think it's always, the racing for me is probably going to feel a little bit more like a Winton. Which, when I look at all the races over the years at Winton, it's always action-packed. There's plenty of passing opportunity. There's certain corners that once you get a little bit of tyre deg, you're going to hurt down the straight. At the end of the straight, there's a massive braking zone, so that creates a passing opportunity. It's a balance of, part of it is very flowing, then it gets to very tight and twisty, so there's a little bit of everything. The boys will be busy. I hope I'm not. But I think it's actually a circuit that will create some good racing, some good passing opportunity. You come off turn one and you're slightly offline or get boxed offline a little bit, you're compromised all the way to turn five, and there's two passing opportunities between exit of one and entry of five. So Yeah, no, but look, there's no doubt. I think the guys that are raced here will be at a little bit of an advantage, but I believe there's a lot of guys over there, even today, walking the track, driving the track, renting Toyota 86s and whatever else they can bludge off someone. But yeah, I think the guys that are, we raced there, there's a lot of supercar drivers raced the Super Tours, which was our form of supercars in New Zealand. So there was plenty of good battles in that. They're the same size car, very similar in lap time and horsepower. So if it was good racing in that, I can't see why 24 professionals can't go and put on a good show.
We will wait and see. Can't wait to see supercars back in New Zealand since Pukki 2022. It's been a little while. Beto, thanks for the catch-up, mate. Enjoy these ones to chat through what's unfolded on the track at the Melbourne Super Sprint. Get yourself ready for a trip to New Zealand. But before you go to New Zealand, am I right in hearing that you're a bit of a busy man and heading back to Bathurst?
Well, I am. I always watched the Paul Morris thing, and he always went on about, you know, grassroots racing. Well, last year I was asked to do, they have a couple of meetings here for Hyundai XLs. So they're racing at the 12 hour as a support category. There's 70 of them on the grid, or 70, 75 of them on the grid. the year before, I think they did three laps in the whole weekend. Last year, we had some, all their practices, all their qualifyings, which I was involved with. We were pretty harsh on them. We said, if you screw this up too much, we're more than happy just for you to pop your car and your trailer and go home. There's enough on the grid. We're not scared to do it. And they had some really good racing. So they asked me back. And so I'm heading back there. Then I get back to the Gold Coast for a day, and I'm actually heading back to New Zealand to do a, not the track inspection, but just a bit of a recce for supercars and MA, going with Dave Stewart, just to make sure that there's the small things. Our boys are very hungry on curbs. We look for things that the local racer may not look for, as in, we're just hungry. As a supercar driver, we're just greedy and we'll do things that they've never seen before. So I can't wait, but I've got to make sure that, as I always call them, my boys, I make sure the track edges, the inside of curbs, there's nothing going to cut tires, all that little, all the sawtooth curbs, go over them. So that's my part. And, I'm looking forward to it.
Should be good, mate. We will see you at the Bathurst 6 Hour this weekend with a horde of Hyundais flying around the mountain. But we'll catch up with you again soon. Thanks for the download.
Cheers, dudes.
There he is, Craig Baird on the Race Control Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again, everyone. We really appreciate the feedback we get from these pods. That is how it was for the Melbourne Super Sprint. Enjoy yourselves. Thanks for tuning in. We'll chat to you again after the Taupo Super 400.